Hello and welcome to another episode of Lit Up with Nina Alvarez. I'm your host, Nina Alvarez. Lit Up is a show about literature and life purpose, about the cross-section between writing and spirituality, in whatever ways we can think to approach it. This week, I'm very, very happy to have on my friend and client, Julian Foster. Julian is a novelist from Rochester, New York. He began his writing career as a spoken word artist under the stage name Tears, performing with his group, The Vagabonds. The Vagabonds have recently split up, but you can still see a lot of Julian's performance on YouTube, right? How do people find you on YouTube?
My stage name is Tears.
With a Z.
Yeah, with a Z, T-E-R-Z. And you can look that up and it'll show I think I have 3 or 4 performances on YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. They're really, really good. Julian he's got a really fascinating background. He has been in gangs. He has gone to jail. And now he has come full circle and is an author and really getting his name out there as a very good novelist. He hopes to bridge people from different walks of life through the power of the written, visual, and performance arts. So, welcome. Nice
Thank
to have you.
You,
Julian.
Glad to be here.
I think I would like to, if I could, let you talk a little bit about your book, Before I Wake. I'll kind of give a little bit for you to riff on, but I want, in your own words, for you to talk about what this book, and if you want to read the summary and then, give your interpretation of that. But I think it's really important that you hear this from Julian, what this book is about.
What the book is about. For me, it was about telling a story from a different perspective, telling a story from a different perspective. I think that that was the reason I wrote it, is because I felt like people really didn't understand what some of the youth that come from this demographic are really going through.
And which demographic?
This is an urban novel. This is right. Written. Story takes place on Jefferson Ave and the surrounding areas, and
in Rochester, New York.
In Rochester, New York, of course, yeah. And so, a lot of people that haven't been exposed to that don't have a real understanding of what's going on and why people do the things they do and why, things are, the way they are. You see things on the news and it's easy to, dehumanize people and to have that point of view like it's them and we're not like that or what have you. But it's circumstantial a lot of times. And people don't take the time to step out of themselves and ask themselves, if I were facing this, if I were in the same situation and I had these same peers and these same parents and these same type of friends, would I have turned out the way I did, And so it was an attempt to try to show that and to try to tell that story from that perspective.
And you really did an amazing job of getting inside the head of your main character, Kiki, who's a 16-year-old girl. I know, and you're obviously not a 16-year-old girl,
right. But
women who read this book all say that you get her right. I mean, the book is about her interiority and meaning her internal life and how she navigates very, very difficult circumstances and makes them make sense to her in the best way she can.
Right.
So you're right. It's very humanizing of this character. And everyone who I know that has read this book feels deeply for her and empathizes deeply with what she goes through because you make her so real.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I accomplished
your goal.
Gold star.
Exactly. I think that's one of the most important things literature can do is start to bridge people who don't understand or see each other clearly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
I definitely agree with that.
Yeah. So Julian's had a pretty good year. So the book came out in August 2014.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And he has been profiled in Post magazine, which is a nice big glossy magazine.
Right.
And you are also going to be reading at a festival in May. Let me pull this up. It's with the magazine Ajuna.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have a date on that?
It's the 28th. It's at Theater Mac Auditorium behind, I believe it's called the Cayuga Museum. I don't want to get it wrong.
Okay.
But
I'm
not really familiar with Auburn. It'll be
my
first.
It's in Auburn, New York, which no one that I know goes to very often.
Right.
But What I like about this is I think Bill, who runs the literary magazine at Juno, writes.
Bill Berry.
Yeah. He has become a big fan of yours and a real champion of your. Oh, yeah.
I did not know
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Yes, yes.
I don't speak to him a lot, though. It's real quick in email.
No,
so.
He's definitely a fan.
Okay.
And, you know, so I was Julian's editor
right.
on the book, and the people, and then there's Raquel Pidel, who wrote a blurb at the back and also copy edited the book, and Christine Green, who was on Lit Up the first episode we had,
right.
and she runs Words on the Verge, which was which Julian gave a reading in October.
Yeah.
It was October.
Okay.
And all the people who have come across the book feel very strongly about its message and championing you as a writer. So if you want to come and see the this reading with Ajuna Magazine, it's a performance-based fundraiser. It's Thursday, May 28th, 2015. Tickets are $10 in advance, $15 at the door. Starts at 7 p.m. And it is, as Julian said, at Theater Mac. And that is in Auburn, New York. If you want to get more information, go to www.aaduna.org. And that's a great organization just to find out more about literary arts
right.
organization.
Right.
So one of the reasons I'm having Julian on today, even though his book came out about 6 months ago, is because of something that happened topically. It's in the news recently that resonated with a scene from Before I Awake, and I think that I think it's an important topic to discuss, and it's I'll let Julian talk more about it, but it's basically the Anaya Ferguson situation,
mm-hmm.
Otherwise known as the McDonald's fight
right
in Brooklyn. I think it was just last week where
right.
About five or six girls ganged up on another girl and really beat her badly
right.
in McDonald's. And everyone around was taking video, watching. No one tried to stop any of it.
Right.
And now a lot of people have weighed in the media calling this 15-year-old girl, I guess, who was the ringleader, I'm guessing,
mm-hmm.
Anaya Ferguson, calling her an animal. There's a lot of negative
right.
backlash
right.
And once again, dehumanization going right. on. So the first scene, the very first scene of Before I Awake, is a girl-on-girl public fight
mm-hmm.
in which our main character, Kiki, publicly beats and strips and humiliates her ex-friend who had betrayed her.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking of Julian. I sent him the Anaya Ferguson link. He had already seen the video, and
right.
now he learns more about the backstory.
Right.
So the connection came to me, and I just would love to hear, and for you to hear, what Julian has to say about this.
I don't know how to attack it. I don't know. As far as, there's so many facets. As
yeah.
far as, like I just said, the one of the reasons that, and that was a perfect example of where something like this happens, and then, you know, you go on the computer and you see people saying things like that, and that's always bothered me, you know what I mean? And I'm not here, and I'm not going to stand behind Anaya and say what she did was right, or, you know, by no means am I going to say what she did is right. I'm not sure that they're even clear on why they were fighting or what they were fighting about. I heard that someone disrespected her friend or something like that, so, you know, it's unclear to me why they were even fighting. I think the biggest thing that people found that was just the grossest part about it is that it appears as though the girl is actually unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And after she's unconscious, Anaya is still kind of stomping on her head.
Right.
And it was really brutal.
It was really brutal. And Anaya was in anger management classes at the time, I read. So it had already been established that she had
right.
anger problems. And right. And so she's just a little unstable,
right.
really.
Right.
But you know, the situation, how I related back to Kiki is that whatever, you know, when Kiki's fighting this girl, she's being egged, they're being egged on. And there's, so people can stand back and say, oh, this girl's an animal, she's crazy, I can't believe she did that. But there is an immense amount of social pressure to retaliate to you save face.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that Before I Wake really looks into is how much pressure there is in the life of this young African-American girl living in an urban environment mm-hmm. to protect her image.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That image is, and in other places it may not be the case, but your image is everything. And I've seen people throw their lives away and be killed behind what other people were possibly going to think of them, where, you know, I've been around other people that were like, who cares what he thinks? You know, it's that easy to say, you know, who cares what it thinks, but what this person thinks, but in certain environments, your reputation is everything. There's that mentality, if I let you disrespect me, then everybody will disrespect me. So I have to make an example of you.
Exactly.
from the door. I have friends that went to prison and gotten out. I have friends that are still in prison, and there's that test. There's that moment when you go in there and someone tests you, and you have to pass that test, or you know, you're going to be what they call the wreck of that prison. People are going to constantly try to take things from you or take advantage of you. So that first encounter, you have to quote unquote show out, and you have to go to an extreme. And then people are like, okay, now I know not to mess with this person. You know what I mean? And I think there was a little bit of that in that Anaya Ferguson situation. It was like grandstanding. It was like, you know, I want everybody to know that, you know, I'm not the one that you should be messing with. You know, I think that played a huge part in it.
Absolutely. Yeah. It seems like it must. Yeah. So there's so much to say about Before I Wake and about what it means that you wrote this book and why. And it's funny, in all the years that we worked together, you wrote the book and I did an analysis and did a little bit of development and you rewrote it really beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I ever really talked to you deeply about, I mean, the why of the book is so apparent. It's socially conscious. There's a social necessity. But I think I'd like to understand a little more about the internal why. Like, how did the idea for Before I Wake come to you? If you can remember the moment when you saw it in your mind.
The actual book, you know, I think people say that all the time. I should write a book, you know. It's like the biggest joke, you know, like that running joke, like you're at the bar and somebody says, hey, this happened. I'm like, wow, you know, you should write a book. I should, you know. And it's like this joke, and it was kind of like that. I mean, I spoke about this with a few people, but I used to work as a sentry, which is a security guard at Madison there. It's now Wilson Foundation on Genesee Street. And just to see what was going on in these young people's lives that you know, they had accepted as a reality at such a young age, you know, and I was like, you know, people do not know this stuff. People have no idea, like, what's going on in the lives of these people, you know, the lives of these kids, and they come to school and they act the way they act, and people are like, this kid's crazy, but you know what I mean? And that's that dehumanization. That's that. I was watching something where Dave Chappelle said that people are quick to call somebody crazy, you know, because it's dismissive.
Right.
You know, oh, he's crazy, you know, and it may not be that. You got to take a little bit more time and have, or try to have some understanding. You know, when you pull these kids, you get them to themselves and you get them away from that mob and you get them away from the stage, if you will, and you talk to these people, you talk to some of these kids, they'll tell you some stories, you know what I mean? And, you know, they'll tell you what's going on within them. And I just wanted to shed some light on that. And there's a lot of places I didn't go for fear that people wouldn't even believe it.
Mm.
It's so extreme and so, you know, you wouldn't even believe, you know, like, so I really, you know, I say I held back on this book a lot because I didn't know how much to give, and I didn't want people to think that, well, now he's just making stuff up. Now he's just doing this to,
well, now
you know.
I really want you to put all the other stuff in a book and read it so I can read it.
Yeah, I'm definitely, yeah. You know, I'm definitely going to ramp it up on the sequel to this one. But
I didn't realize you were holding back.
Yeah,
there's a lot. This book is already very raw.
Yeah.
Wow.
There was a lot of stuff. And then, you know, a lot of stuff that's just true stories. I was talking to, there's a character in my book, as you know, her name is Cry. She's currently incarcerated and we write and we keep in touch. And as a matter of fact, I just got a letter from her yesterday. And she since has handed my book around in the prison. And it's really popular. And sometimes some of the females will put a letter in her letter and they'll write me. You know what I mean?
What?
And one of the girls who wrote me, her name is Aisha. She's been in prison 24 years. And she's, of course, wanting to write, too. And she said the same thing. She was like, I could tell you stories of things that have happened in here and things I've experienced that people wouldn't even believe. And she was like, that's why I'm going to call it fiction, because people wouldn't even believe what goes on behind these walls, you know. Wow. And it's just, you know, one of those type deals. I kind of got off.
No, that's really, that's actually very, very interesting. So the process for you, though, when you sat down to start writing, let me just ask you something. Did you write on computer or notepad?
I had a laptop.
Laptop. Mm-hmm. Okay. Was it a thing where you just saw a scene and you started transcribing it, or did you, I guess, did you think through everything really hard, or did you just, it just sort of come to you?
No. I was kind of like seeing when you were going to like kind of ask that. I didn't want to jump to that, but, Yeah, I saw the scene. I think everybody has a different process. You know, there's people and there's conventional people. And when you go to college and probably take writing classes, they'll talk to you about storyboardings and maybe, you know, I've seen this stuff on the computer as far as note cards or writing an outline or, you know, what have you. I literally had nothing.
Right.
I literally sat at the computer and, you know, saw something, saw a scene, or I don't know, for some reason I decided I knew I wanted to write the book, but I didn't know how it was going to start. And I knew I wanted it to start with a bang. And then, you know, thinking over that, and then I finally said, okay, this is how I'm going to start it. And I would relate back to something that I saw in life, and I would just write it, and I would try to remember. I mean, my process as far as writing, when I'm in that zone, when I'm in that place, it's as real as me sitting at this table with you. I see it in my head just like that. What it smells like, what it looks like, what the voices sound like, and I'm in that place, you know. And I don't know. I wish there was like some way that I could, I don't know, like write that down for people that like struggle with it. I consider it a gift. Yeah, I really do.
I think on some level it really is a gift. And I want to take this moment to really emphasize that people who are blocked, a lot of times it's because they're not doing what they have to do to get to that place where the book is real and they're really there. Maybe they're distracted. Maybe they doubt what they're seeing. But I always think about, you know, I always talk to Julian about Stephen King. You know, I made him read On Writing.
Right.
And he talks about, he calls it the far seeing place. And he has to go through a whole like ritual. Like he goes to the same writing desk the same time every day. But when he's there, he's receiving the images and he's just transcribing them. And he's not questioning or like doubting, or yeah, like thinking back, what did I learn in English class? He's just there. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes books like Tony's so good. That's what makes obviously Stephen King's books so good, I think, is that there's nothing watered down. They're really, the world they're creating is as real to them as this world. And that's how it becomes real to the reader.
Okay.
You know, so I think I love the way you describe your process.
Yeah. It's kind of, I don't know if that's like really clear to somebody that's going to hear this and they're trying to look for, you know, ways to break through and get to that place. And like I said, I wish it was like really easy, but it's really not something that I can even explain. It's just more like a feeling. I think there was a movie called Finding Forrester.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, you write the first draft with your heart and the second with your head. Mm. And so for me, it's like, it's very much an emotion and a feeling, and I just get it out. And then, you know, like they say, not to sound too cliche, but it like anything else, it's like building a house. You got to get that foundation and that framework up. And then you can always go back and you can put in heated towel racks and the jacuzzi tub and the cathedral ceilings. And you can do all that later once it's there.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you just got to have like that, get in that place and have that, get in, you know, the zone or whatever you want to call it when you have that feeling, and then, you know, just go with it. And that's what I do, and I just let it come out, and I worry about all that other stuff after. You know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, breaking down that moment of what we call inspiration or whatever, I mean, people have been trying to do that since the dawn of, you know, art. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you define or give people steps to make good art? And I think you're right. It's like some part of it is talent. Part of it is just the way you're wired or what you're open to at that moment. Mm-hmm. But I would say that something anyone can do at any time is what Julian talked about, which is go to a memory that has to do with what you're writing about. So even if you're writing like sci-fi fiction, you know, it takes place in another world, go to a memory of how people interact with each other. And so even your characters, no matter what they, whatever weird race they could be, I'm going to the most extreme example, right. But whatever you're dealing with, it's going to have to come back to what human life feels like, because that's what resonates. So bringing emotional memory to the fore is what's important. And if there's things that you don't want to look at in your own life, if you flinch at them, you're probably going to miss the best things you have to write about. I always feel like the word I always think of Julian's book is unflinching. You know, you look at everything straight on.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to look for a little piece for you to read, if you don't mind. Got to make sure there's no swear words in it, since this is a radio show. But while I'm doing that, can you tell us a little bit about the next book you're working on?
Oh, okay. We kind of talked about this yesterday. The next book is not in this series. It's called A Beautiful Me, and it's basically, you know, I'm gonna give you like some real like broad strokes, because like I don't, you know, I'm still writing it, so I kind of don't know, but I do know that it's about a person. You know, we all know those people that are doing something, take for instance, like, I don't know if you've ever seen Good Will Hunting, that guy that was extremely smart, but he's working as a janitor,
yes,
or what have you, that type of arrangement, you know, that a person living their life like that, and how, you know, they're forced to, on the outward, you know, their outward appearance and how they interact with everybody, they have to act a certain way, but inside, you know, it's kind of killing them inside. They see life different. They feel life different. And what they're doing is just basically, you know, what they've been doing. I don't know if it's because of routine or you know, fear. You know, some people aren't successful because they're scared to be. But you know, it's that inner conflict, and it kind of shows that inner conflict and how it builds up in him, and ultimately what it leads him to doing in the end, without, you know, giving it away.
I think that's a beautiful human tragedy and or victory, depending on how, but how we struggle, how we struggle to be who we can be in the world, like to meet potential. And that's something I think about a lot, because one of the things I do is, as a teacher and as a writing coach, is I look at people who are aspiring writers, and I have to like cut through all of the self-doubt and the question and look for the genius that's going on in them. But I'm interested in that, for every single person, finding their genius and how, like, and how that process happens. And a lot of times it is, as much as you'd want to save everyone, it's their own individual journey.
Right.
You know? Right. Okay. All right. Well, we are going to get to hear Julian read a little bit from Before I Wake, and I'll let him set it up.
This part of the book is when Kiki changes careers, quote unquote, and she moves from a former prostitution basically, to trying to be a drug dealer. And she runs into one of the girls that she had, she was prostituting with, who's still, you know, continuing to work in that field, essentially. So this is where they kind of meet again.
Perfect.
The paint on the walls was a faded yellow that began to crack when it reached the ceiling at the corners, where she could see watermarks from the apartment above. There was a coffee table that looked like it probably came with the apartment, years before Lotto and Nut ever set up shop there. Four ashtrays cluttered the table, overflowing with cigar tobacco and empty wrap packages. She moved a magazine with her hand to reveal another bootleg X-rated DVD with big booty woman posing in nothing but fishnet stockings and heels. She shook her head as she noticed the flattened box of Magnum condoms and rolled her eyes, remembering what her grandmother would always say. If these walls could talk, the things they would say. She smiled at the thought of her grandmother, but was interrupted when Coco emerged from the bathroom, glanced over at her twice, and stopped in her tracks. Hey, girl, she waved and walked around the kitchen table and into the room with Kiki as if she was fully dressed. What up, Kiki answered, trying to keep it short. You working over here, too? These niggas is some major tricks, girl. You're gonna make some paper once you figure out what they like. We've been here 2 days now, Coco whispered as she kept glancing over her shoulder, making sure no one had walked up behind her. She sat down across from Kiki and found the cigarettes on the cluttered table and lit one. Nah, not like that. I'm trying to do something different. She gave Coco a serious look that said, don't blow up my spot, bitch. She prepared herself for battle as she waited to see what Coco's reaction would be. Oh, okay. I hear that shit. This hoeing shit ain't for everybody. You gotta get your paper, though, she said casually as she exhaled the smoke towards the ceiling. Kiki was relieved and relaxed herself. She could tell immediately that Coco wasn't the talking type. She glanced down and noticed how her nipples were rock hard, even though there wasn't a draft in the room. Dope ain't never been my thing, though. She spoke again before she took another long pull on the cigarette. Too much drama, too many cutthroat niggas, too many snitches, too much time, and I love dick too much to be locked up with a bunch of stankin' ass bitches. She ran down the list like she had spent some time alone arranging it in order of importance. I feel you, Kiki laughed as she continued to sneak glances at Coco's body. She had a cute belly button piercing that worked well against the complexion of her skin. Me, I'd rather just lay on my back for mines. I get the best of both worlds, good dick and good money. Coco spoke the words rapid fire with no shame in her tone. Kiki nodded and smiled, but deep inside wondered what happened in a girl's life to make her just accept that she was a hoe. Coco sat there in front of her and said it no differently than someone would say that they had worked for the phone company for the last 10 years. She had to respect it, though. At least she was being real about it. The world was filled with too many bitches that dressed up and played professional or high maintenance. They would lie to your face forever about how they didn't suck dick or do this and that. But when the lights went out or they were out of your sight, they got down with the best of them. The same girls would fight you to the death if you ever called them a hoe and deny shit until they were blue in the face. But Coco was at least a stand-up bitch about hers.
Thank you. I love the whole book is like that. It's just so, it takes you there where they are, and there's so much heart and honesty in it. I don't know. I'm just always glad to have you on, to have you when we did Bidasso together, and have you here today talking about your book with the public and hearing you share it. If you'd like to get in touch with Julian Foster, check him out. It's Julian Foster, author. He's on Facebook. He is on Twitter sometimes. You can find him on sometimes. It's been a while. But mostly, I really want to encourage everyone to go onto Amazon.com and look for Before I Wake by Julian Foster. Purchase the print book, get the ebook, whatever it is, but take time to do it. You will not regret it. We had the ebook for free on Kindle for a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And 1,500 downloads that week. There were a couple days where his book was the top of the African American literature bestsellers, and also in literary fiction. Okay, so I'm not really sure what else to say besides I can't stress enough how honored I feel to have worked on this book with you, Julian. Is there anything else you want to say to anyone?
With regards to the book, I mean, you basically already plugged it. And for anybody out there that's thinking about writing, I mean, I guess I can just tell you, just do it. You got to just sit down and commit to it and get it done.
I like that. It's tweetable. All right. If you'd like to be in touch with me, Nina Alvarez, you can send me an email at nina@dreamyourbook.com. I'll be giving a free talk on self-publishing from 6 to 7 on May 1st at Writers and Books. And actually, this book was self-published, and it was a good ride. I will also be teaching a self-publishing workshop at Writers and Books from late May to September. And to learn more about that, you can go to wab.org or email me again, nina@dreamyourbook.com. Thank you so much for being with us today on Lit Up with Nina Alvarez and my guest, author Julian Foster. Thank you so much.